This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 207.
Today's episode is brought to you by WHOOP, a scientifically grounded system designed to help athletes get the best out of their bodies and optimize performance. Athletes overtrain, undertrain, misinterpret fitness peaks, and often don't really understand the importance of sleep and recovery. So that's where the WHOOP Fitness Tracker comes in. Visit WHOOP.com to learn more and use the code MTA for $50 off. That's WHOOP.com and use the code MTA. Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where we inspire and empower you to take your running and health to the next level. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we interview marathon beast Mike Wardian, who recently completed 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents in record speed. What does it look like to push the limits of human endurance, and how does Mike stay motivated? And in the quick tip segment, Angie will answer important questions about compression gear. What does the science say? And to get more information and support in your training goals, find out how to connect with us and our coaches and our awesome online community when you visit MarathonTrainingAcademy.com. Well, it's great to be back on the microphone for another podcast episode. We're excited to have Mike Wardian joining us, probably the most prolific racer alive today. I mean, the amount of races this guy does every year and the world records he's set and just marathons, ultra marathons, mountains, valleys, rivers. I mean, he does it all.
Rivers.
If there's a race, he's going to be there. It's amazing. And we found out that we won't be getting into the New York City Marathon.
Yes, big crocodile tears. We were keeping our expectations low.
Yes.
I think it's like the 5th or 6th rejection that I've gotten, so I'm used to being rejected.
I wonder if there's a record number of rejections. Like, has anybody been rejected 12 times?
Well, it used to be that automatically, I think on the 5th time that you got in, if you hadn't gotten in previously, you would get automatically into the race, but they took that exception away.
It just became so popular, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I think they had like just a record number of entries.
Well, I think that after everyone gets in who qualifies, which is very hard, by the way, then they should start alphabetically by first name. And if a wife gets in, her husband ought to be able to get into. What do you think? What do you think, Angie?
Sounds like that's setting you up for a spot. Well, congratulations to everyone who did get into the New York City Marathon. We're very excited for you, and it'll be a spectacular event as usual.
Yeah, and even though we won't be there, as far as we know, we look forward to keeping up with that event, and we have several folks in the academy that are training for that using our training plans and program. So it's always fun to see folks who are in training for various races. And it's always fun to hear about people crossing the finish line. So Angie wants to read a couple shout-outs here before we get into our interview with Mike.
That's right. This note comes from Nikki in the Academy. She says, "Sometimes it's the races that you go into with no expectations that turn out the best. I signed up with less than a week's notice to run the Cowtown Marathon in Fort Worth, Texas, and set a new PR. I'm getting closer to the sub-430 club. They put on a great event as usual."
Well, that's awesome that she's in good enough shape to sign up for a marathon on a whim. Like that.
Yeah, that's a wonderful feeling.
It's great to be in that position. And congrats, Nikki, on the PR.
And Alex on our Facebook page comments, "Yesterday I finished my first ever full marathon, the Heartbreaker Marathon in the New Forest, UK, and I can't believe I managed to get a sub-4-hour finish. 3 hours, 52 minutes, and 57 seconds to be exact.
Nice.
On the most brutal terrain I've ever run so far. I don't think I could have gotten there without the help of MTA and my long training runs. I used a few techniques that you've discussed on your podcast to drag my sorry behind to the finish line from around mile 23. I even started to make up my own military cadence songs, and I'm sure I was singing out loud at some points as I didn't know what else to do. Today I'm feeling a few aches and pains, but I can't believe that I managed to complete it. Hopefully I can recover in time for my next race in 3 weeks. For all those who are at the beginning of their marathon journey, just know that you can get there, and MTA will definitely help in that process. Thanks," and that comes from Alex.
Well, that is right. You can get there. You do have what it takes. Thank you, Alex, for showing us what's possible. And it was interesting, you know, the mind games that he had to kind of invent at mile 23. You would think that if you get to mile 23, that it'd be sort of a relief because you're like, oh, only 3 miles left. But it doesn't feel that way to me when I'm at mile 23. It's like, oh, I still have 3 whole miles.
It is definitely still a substantial distance. But then if you think back to how many times you've run 5K before, that can help. But it sounds like, you know, he really had some brutal terrain to cover.
That's a good trick.
So, yeah.
And I've heard you say that before. You know, you get 3 miles left. Just tell yourself, oh, this is just an easy training run on most days. This is just like running back home from, boom, this spot right here. You can even map out, you know, like your normal running course.
Yeah.
You're a marathoner. You can do 5K. No problem.
Exactly. Even on dead legs. The next couple of shout outs are actually stories of people who have are running races with their partners. And I thought it was kind of cool. This kind of theme came up. So the first one comes from Andre. He says, thanks to advice from Angie and our MTA family, my wife Isabel finished her first half marathon on Miami Beach, although suffering from IT issues at the end of her training. Her knee was good for the first 8 miles, but she sucked it up and finished something I never expected her to do. She's always been there for me at all of my races, but to have her actually run her own half marathon is amazing. The MTA podcast got her motivated to do her first half, and I have to admit that all of my half marathons and marathons, this was the most meaningful race to come through the finish line holding my wife's hand.
Well, that's great. Another husband-wife running duo. That's great.
That's right. Congratulations, Isabel. And this last note comes from Fody. He's a coaching client of mine. He says, the Little Rock Marathon is done. I'm so proud of my wife, Judith, for completing her first, and according to her, only marathon. This was marathon number 40 for me, and I achieved my goal of coming in under 4 hours and 30 minutes. My wife's best post-race comment, the things we do for a car magnet. Well deserved.
It's been really fun to watch Judith's progress, because I remember, and of course, Fody's been a client of yours for a long time, and he's done tons of marathons. But I remember when she ran, I think, her first 5K,
yes,
and they just started building up and
doing half marathons, and then finally a marathon. So
yeah.
Congratulations, Judy and Fody.
There's magic happening, and it feels awesome to be there to see it. So congrats to everyone out there who are building up your miles and pushing your endurance and finding out what you're made of. This interview with Michael Wardian is going to be interesting because he's going to walk you through his 7-marathon and 7-day and 7-continent record that he set. Little bio here, Mike Wardian is sometimes called the Beast. Sometimes he's called Iron Mike. He's possibly the most prolific racer in the world. In 2016, he ran 47 events and had multiple wins and records, including setting the fastest ever time for all the Abbott World Marathon majors, all the 6 world majors, with an average time of 2 hours, 31 minutes, and 9 seconds. And Angie, I was thinking back to the last time we had him on our podcast. He had just set the record for the fastest 50K time on an indoor 200-meter track. We were there.
We were.
Because you were running a marathon, that same event, and you won the female division, I might add.
Of 4 women. I have to quickly add that.
Yes, but you smoked those 4 women, so my wife is awesome. Just let me brag. Anyway, we got to meet Mike in person, and we later had him on the show. But he also holds the record for the fastest 50K time on a treadmill. And I don't know of anyone else who is so good at running back-to-back marathons, though. He, for example, he ran 2:21 at the U.S. Olympic Trials in Houston, and then the next day ran 2:31 at the Houston Marathon. One year he ran the Badwater 135, which is called the toughest foot race on planet Earth. It goes through Death Valley. And he finished third. And then 4 days later, he ran an indoor marathon and won it.
Wow.
And then 2 weeks later, he ran the San Francisco Marathon and won it. And he had food poisoning the night before.
I don't think this guy is human.
I know. So a lot of good stuff. Mike's a graduate of Michigan State University, and he lives with his wife and 2 kids in Arlington, Virginia. So let's get into that conversation with Mike Wardian right now. Well on my way, well on my way. All right, we're on the podcast now with Michael Wardian, and Mike, it's great to have you on the show again. It's been a couple of years, and also thanks for coming to our meetup in Berlin.
No worries, man. It was so good to see you guys there. It was a real treat. It's always nice to get to see friends in different places, and getting a chance to run with you guys and hang out and take selfies in front of the Brandenburg Gate was a memory I'll cherish for sure.
It was a pleasant surprise because we didn't know that you were going to come. You just sort of showed up, and I'm like, whoa, that's Mike Wardian. You're all decked out in HOKA and everything. It was It was amazing.
It made a lot of people's day, I think.
Made my day.
Yeah, definitely. It was really cool to see you guys. And I was having a pretty interesting weekend. I got to meet some local Germans and they were showing me around. So it was pretty awesome.
Well, you've done a lot since then. I mean, and that was only like last September. So yeah. Let's just start.
Where do we start?
Yeah, I think we'll start from there. So let's talk about your quest to run the fastest world marathon major time accumulatively and sort of what did that look like and what got you into doing that?
That was like a long-term goal. It was a couple of years in the making, just trying to get into the various races and then finding the resources to be able to travel to so many different cool places in the course of a year. And then just the logistics of like where to sleep and, mm-hmm. you know, how you're going to eat. And so it was Berlin was, I think, the fourth one in the six. So there's Tokyo, Boston, London, and those are the spring races, basically. And then Berlin starts kind of the fall races. So it's Berlin, Chicago, and then New York. And every single one of those races is, you know, would be like just an awesome race to do.
Yeah.
You know, over the course of 1 year or let alone like in the course of your lifetime. So the opportunity to do all six at the same year and just was super special and something like I was so pumped to be able to do. And then to be able to set the fastest time also, like I think I averaged around 2 hours and 31 minutes for all the races. So
nice.
To be consistent and to run, you know, pretty strong time and break the record by so much was a pretty fantastic way to end the year. And I think Berlin was actually probably one of my fastest races. And I was coming off of doing UTMB only a couple weeks before it. So I felt like it was such a beautiful day, as you guys know. And, you know, there was almost a world record set on that day. And to be a part of, you know, a race where there's almost a world record in the course of setting a fastest record myself, like not even close to that guy, but like just to be mm-hmm. in the same race. And it was pretty incredible. And I can see why, you know, records get set there. It's ideal conditions. The course is pretty fantastically laid out and the crowd is second to none. I mean, they're just fired up and super enthusiastic and kind of driving you towards that finish line. And I've kind of felt that at all the big races and actually most of the events I do, you usually get a good amount of support. So,
yeah, definitely. So after that world record, what was the next world record that you went after?
I don't think you rested long, actually. It seems like after you did
No, I didn't actually. Yeah, I forgot about that. But yeah, I went and to celebrate, I went to Las Vegas to try to set a marathon dressed up like Elvis. And it worked out. Instead of just setting the record, I actually ended up winning the race too, which was crazy surprising and awesome all at the same time. So I set the world record and then I also ended up winning the race. So that was just an unbelievable cherry on top of an already pretty incredible finish to the year. And then I think the next weekend I might have even done the JFK 50 miler or some. Yeah, I actually should look at my spreadsheet with all my stuff.
The record that you set in Vegas, specifically, what was it? The fastest marathon in a costume?
No, the fastest marathon dressed as Elvis.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the previous record?
It was actually Ian Sharman, my buddy, and he had ran 2:41, I think. So pretty fast still, like time. And he's done some really cool things as Elvis, like he's run across the Grand Canyon, the rim to rim to rim. And
I have to ask, did you take the costume for a test drive? I mean, the full thing before you ran to test it out for breathability or itchiness or.
Yeah, no, I totally did. I did. Well, I actually did a really cool documentary type thing with Gatorade Endurance, who are on all the World Marathon major courses. So like it was something that I'd been able to sample over the course of the year. And so we did a project together and it was really, really cool to to get to, you know, do that. But as part of that, I ran around DC in my Elvis outfit.
So you do a ton of races, and a lot of them, you know, are pretty logistically challenging to get into and travel. How far ahead do you usually plan? I mean, do you have like a pretty set schedule a year in advance, or are you just kind of really open to opportunities that come in?
Yeah, so some of the stuff is set a couple of years, you know, a year or more in advance. Like I already have requests for stuff in 2018 that is, I missed out on some opportunities because I love to schedule stuff out so much. So I've kind of left my fall pretty open this year, because I always get these like ridiculously awesome offers from people to like, hey, do you want to come to Mount Everest and run a marathon? Or, wow, you know, do you want to come and do something cool in India or Turkey or, you know, South America or even in the US? Like, hey, we've got this cool race. I want to say yes to everything, yeah, because that's the way I am. And so I've got everything planned, the big stuff planned till the Hard Rock 100 miler this summer. And then after that, I'm still trying to decide, you know, if I can, you know, maybe get into the Leadville 100 miler or go back to UTMB or do something else. And so there's like so many just incredible, cool things out there. And I want to keep exploring what's available and what I don't know, like things that I've never run 400 kilometers before at a single push. Like, what does yeah, that mean? Like, can I even do that? Like,
right.
So you're still trying to push and kind of see what your own personal limits are too, it sounds like.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what is important in all this stuff is like, I mean, I feel like I'm at the point now where if I wanted to just run a marathon every weekend, like I could probably do that. But I don't know how much that would push me to keep improving as an athlete. And
yeah,
that being said, like I really enjoyed running 7 marathons every single day. And like I could see like at some point going after like the 10-day world record, a marathon every day for 10 days, or like maybe do a marathon every day, 50 days in all 50 states,
yeah,
or something like.
Well, let's talk about your 7 continent record that you just set.
Yeah.
Been in the news a lot recently, and it's been fun to follow the journey and see the photos. I've been following you on Instagram and other places. So can you just kind of do a blow by blow for us, like starting? The first race was in Antarctica, correct?
It was, yeah. So the reason we started in Antarctica was because that's the race that's most weather dependent. Mm-hmm. So like if you started the race in a different location and you couldn't get to Antarctica, then you're kind of in trouble as yeah, to if you want to do it in 7 days. So it makes the most sense probably to start in Antarctica. And it's really crucial that you get a good weather window. So, you know, we had a couple of days down at the base in Antarctica and we were kind of on call. Like, we got there on a Friday and we left on Monday, but we could have run basically any time between when we got there until when we were hoping to leave. And actually everything worked out exactly like the race organizers, this guy, Richard Donovan, had planned it. Like the dude is just dialed in, like he had it all set up, but, it went really well. And we had a nice couple days to hang out and get acclimatized and test kit and, you know, just kind of make sure everything was in order and just kind of prepare ourselves mentally for a big week. I mean, I'd never run that many miles in my life. Like even with all the running I've done and all the stage racing, I've never run like 183 miles in the course of a week, let alone, you know, when you're trying to run them fast and in different places
and traveling.
So, yeah, exactly. Like traveling and trying to figure out how you're going to, you know, get calories and sleep and all the stuff that goes along with, you know, performing at your best. And so the first race went really well. Like I was thinking like, wow, it'd be amazing to break 3 hours. And I actually had a bet with one of the other athletes, this guy, Jonathan Fisher. Like if I could do 2 hours and 45 minutes, he was going to, you know, do this, you know, we had a little bet like about what would happen like for dinner. And so I was really pushing, like, I was like, ah, that would be like a stretch goal. Right. And
yeah.
And it was just super windy. Like the first couple laps were, it was a little over a 10 kilometer lap. And the first two laps were pretty, The weather was pretty good and the course was okay. But by the third lap, there were really high winds, between like 20 and 30 knot winds on the backside. And the weather got kind of socked in a little bit. It got, you know, really gusty and dark and kind of like real Antarctica is what the guys said. Like, this is like what you should want.
So what are the temps?
So it was between negative 30 probably and negative 35 Celsius. I mean, which isn't terribly cold, but it's legit cold. And especially when the wind picks up, it made it really cold. And it was funny because the first lap I was like, oh man, I overdressed. Like, I should definitely, like, you know, maybe I should take off my understuff. And the second loop I was like, I'm okay. And you may even see there's a couple pictures with me with my gloves off, like trying to regulate my temperature.
Yes.
And by like the third loop, I was like, oh my God, I'd be dead if I had miscalculated and not worn what I wore. So I had like a UVU jacket and some pants and I was able to run, you know, relatively fast and even take in some calories. Like at the North Pole Marathon, I wasn't able to take in any calories. And so I was able to get some nutrition in, which was good. And I felt really strong. And then I was also like worried because the weather got so bad. I thought like we might have to do it all again the next day because, the aircraft, they actually, as soon as the aircraft takes off, that's when they start the race. Cause it takes 4.5 hours for the plane to get from Punta Arenas to the base where we were running. Cause we weren't running. Like, you know, a lot of people when they run in Antarctica or for the marathons and stuff, they just go to like one of the little islands and stuff. But we were actually pretty deep, like around the 80th degree. So we were pretty deep in Antarctica, like real full on experience.
Wow.
Like, so it was pretty far from Punta Arenas. So like, they start the race and it has to be a good weather window so that you can get out. But it looked like it was going to, maybe the plane was going to get turned around or whatnot. So like, you're just doing the race and they say like after the first lap, like, oh, they can just stop the race and then, or they just, you finish it. And then, they say like, oh, the plane wasn't able to land. Like, we'll have to try again tomorrow, or it could be a couple days depending on how bad the weather gets. So like, we could have been there, you know, for a while. But we got out and then we flew the 4.5 hours back to Punta Arenas and we got in around maybe 10:30, 11, I think. And we started the race at 5 o'clock in the morning, right next to the hotel. So that was the one night we spent in a hotel, ran the race right along the water, really beautiful, like just bike trail. It was cool because you got to see the city come to life. You know, no one's really up there at 5 in the morning, right? But by 7 o'clock in the morning, people are getting ready to go to school or work. And so more and more people came out to cheer us on. And actually at the end, the mayor and of the city had come out and was there for the finish when I finished. And it was cool, you know, to have two wins within like 24 hours or so. So that was a really nice way to finish. And I felt really strong and was in control. And I think I ran 2:41 maybe or something. Then everyone finished and we hopped on the plane, and that was the first time we got to see what our we flew a Russian Aleutian plane to Antarctica, which is just kind of like a converted cargo plane where they just kind of bolt in some chairs. So it's pretty crazy. It's really, really basic. So this was what we went to, Airbus 319, kitted out like business class, for the rest of the trip. So it was a really nice plane, kind of an older model. So like,
so you guys had your own plane.
Yeah. So we had our own, charter plane. It was 12 rows of business class seats. So two and two. And so it was cool. Like my same roommate that I had, the whole time was this guy, Martin from Oslo. So he's one of the coolest dudes ever. And we became quick friends. And so he was my seatmate and basically roommate because that was our that was where we were sleeping. So we flew from Punta Arenas to Brazil to get fuel. And then from there we flew to Miami, and that was really nice because we've been gone for almost a week or so from our families. So a lot of people's families from the U.S. came to Miami, and my wife came down and kind of resupplied me with food, and it was yeah. really cool to have her there. And I had a bunch of friends and family that came out to the race, and so it was nice to be able to run there. And I actually ran my fastest time there. I think I ran around 2:36 or so.
Did you win that one as well?
Yep. So I won all the races in every location. So,
yeah. We need to let people know that this, I mean, Ryan Hall was on this trip. Some other probably really good runners.
Yeah. So Ryan Hall was one of the athletes. He's actually retired from running. Yeah, so I had a little bit of an advantage. he's really into weightlifting. So if we were doing weightlifting, he would crush me, but, it was a running race. So yeah, so I got lucky that he was more focused on where the gym was. So, and he was really impressive. Like, we got to become friends, and that was a real treat. Like, just the people on the trip in general, like, everybody on the trip was really just a great person. Like, there was nobody that I was like, I can't stand that person. Like, I was really impressed. Like, it was just such a really diverse group, but also just really, really cool and dedicated and passionate. Like, I had my friend Beth Ann, she's a local woman here in DC, and she's like, has brain cancer and was doing it, and it was just so impressive. Wow. And there was a blind woman, Sinead, from Ireland, who was the first blind person to ever do this. And
this would make a great documentary if, like, filmmakers
actually there were some filmmakers, so I'm hoping and so they were taking a lot of footage, so I'm hoping that, you know, they're able to do something really cool with it. Like, it's yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things where, you know, hopefully people, you know, there's definitely characters, and, you know, and it was so cool to see everyone kind of blossom over the course of the trip too. Like, you know, cause we're all nervous when it first starts. Like, none of us have really run in Antarctica or have done anything this kind of huge before. So, you know, to see people by the end, you know, everyone's, you know, just shattered, but also just committed, you know, by like the second or third day, you're like, oh my God, you can see it in their eyes. You know, they're going to finish, and, they're pushing their body to the absolute limit. And, you know, there's tears and just so much courage out there, and, dedication and training, and, just to see people like turn into, like, especially there's this one, guy, Patrick, that, you know, he wasn't sure how his leg was going to hold up. And then, you know, he actually, you know, just got stronger every single day, but he had put in so much training. Like, you could just see it. And, you know, he was actually like, pushing every single day. And like, I was like, wow, this is so cool to see, like, just how he transformed from like just a guy that wanted to finish to a guy that wanted to, like, you know, compete for the podium. And, just really incredible stories, all of them.
So even though you finished first, were you able to hang around and see other people finish, or kind of experience?
Well, yeah, that was what was so cool about it, is it was designed to make it really easy for us, because we, you know, we didn't really know where we were. So, and we were doing a lot of like stuff, you know, you would fly, and then within 2 hours of landing, you know, you'd clear customs, pick up your bags. And then by the end, we actually would just stop getting our bags off the plane. We would either just change on the plane before we left, or just in the bathroom at the airport. So like, you'd just carry all your stuff in like a day bag and just leave everything else on the plane, because it was so much faster than having to wait for bags to come through. So yeah, it was really cool. But the courses were basically designed so you couldn't mess it up. You know, they were like
loop courses.
Or like an out and back. Mm-hmm. So it was like a mile out or 2 miles out and then 2 miles back. And that would be like a big course, you know? So, so I got to see everybody a lot, you know, you're doing like 10 laps or
Hi
something.
Again and again.
Yeah, exactly. And that was what was so cool about it, is there was all different levels and abilities, just like at a regular race. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of compacted. There was 33 of us that started, 32 people finished. One guy, Jonathan, my buddy, ended up hurting his Achilles, so he wasn't able to finish. But, you know, what was so cool is, like, you know, there was only one person that was not able to make it to the end, and it was really because of injury. And, you know, other people had stuff to go wrong, but were still able to complete it. So it was super powerful to see. So, and it was really cool because you got to see it all happen, you know, right in front of your eyes. Especially, I was moving pretty fast, but I was still able to, you know, cheer people on, and they were able to cheer me on. And we became like a big family over the course of the trip. And, you know, I'm still staying in touch.
So where were the final four races at?
Yeah, so sorry. So we kind of left off in Miami, and then we flew from Miami to Madrid via Lisbon because we had to, couldn't make it all the way there. The aircraft has like a 5,000 kilometer range, so we had to get some gas in Lisbon. And then we went on to Madrid where we did the marathon. And that was really cool. There were some guys that came out to see some of us run, and I met a guy from the U.S. orienteering team, which is great because I am doing the Barclays Marathon. Oh. So I was able to talk to him about orienteering. Yeah. So, which is funny because I have about a month to get really good, and I need to start like today. So like I actually had an epiphany this morning when I was running. I was like, I can probably learn from YouTube. Like, yes. I bet I can learn from YouTube. So
yeah,
I'm going to do some YouTubing today, and then I'm going to practice this weekend since I'm home. And so Madrid went really well. I got to meet some really cool people. I actually met a guy that had done the race, I think the year before, this guy, Stefan, and he is a really nice guy. He was able to, I didn't know this, but he put up a prize for the sportsmanship award. So I was able to meet him there. And then it was actually funny, at the end of the trip, I was awarded the sportsmanship award. And wow. It was cool because you get to donate. He was giving out $15,000 to donate to a charity. So
that's amazing.
I was able to, it was really cool. So I was able to donate that to World Visions, their 6K for water. So helped a bunch of people get some water.
Awesome.
And that was really cool to get the chance.
You were on a epic winning streak. So you won every single race. Plus you broke the world record and you won the sportsmanship award.
Yeah, it was neat. It was a great way to kind of finish the event. But yeah, I think I'm getting ahead of myself. So yeah, so we did Madrid, and then we went right from Madrid to Marrakesh. And
which is where?
It's in Morocco.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
Madrid and or Spain and Morocco are very close together. So we were able to spend a night in the hotel in Marrakesh. That was our second night in a hotel, which was unbelievably luxurious.
Actually, like horizontal. It was probably so nice.
Yeah, because the business class seats were incredibly comfortable, but they didn't go all the way flat. Mm. And so, like, I did not sleep. I'm not a normally good sleeper, but I think I slept a total of 16 hours over the course of the week. So, I did not sleep very well at all.
Wow.
So I was able to catch a couple hours in Marrakesh, and then it was really cool. I'd done a race in Morocco before called the Marathon de Sable, where you carry all your sack for a week. And one of the brothers that has won the race a bunch, Lassine, was there, and he was the race director for the marathon. So it was just around this park, but it was really incredible. That in a couple of the cities, they were actually getting ready for their winter marathon. So like Miami, the marathon was that weekend. And in Morocco, they had their marathon. So we actually ran like right by the start and finish line of the marathon. So we got to see the guys setting up, and there was guys with like machine guns. And we had to do like 10 or 12 loops. I think it was 12 loops of this park.
Wait, so the guys with machine guns, I'm sorry.
It's a security probably for the event that was coming up.
Okay.
Well, no, they were, I think they were for being in Morocco. Like they were just walking around.
Yeah.
They weren't for the event. I think they were just.
Just something you see, but something that we're not used to seeing when we run a marathon.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And we're used to people at aid stations that will give you a gel or something.
Yeah, exactly. So there was only one aid station, but there were like 20 guys with machine guns along the course, which was cool. And they were all straight faced, but like every time I went around, I said hi to them. And so by the end, they were like cheering for me. It was awesome. Because
they do a little celebratory shoot in the air for you, firing the guns.
They did not. And I'm glad because I think they would. Yeah, they were just awesome. So yeah, so it was really cool. That was a nice a nice event. And then we flew from there to Dubai, and Dubai was spectacular as Dubai is, but it was ridiculously hot. Like, so that was the other challenge with this, is like, just besides the time differences and the location and the food, but also just like the heat factor. So like, we went from running in negative 30 Celsius to like positive 35 in Dubai. And so you're just sopping in sweat. And also, we didn't start until like 9 a.m. because we got a little delayed. So
you're in the heat of the day.
Yeah. So it got really, really unbelievably hot. And we were just running along the waterfront on this famous beach. So you're, you know, kind of weaving in and out of people. And it was a place where a lot of people run, and there's like a really nice surface, but it's not a fast surface. Like, it's great. It like absorbs your feet. So it was interesting to try to run fast on a, like a decking. And then there was a like decking on one side of the track, and then the other side was this soft surface. And then in the middle, there was like these like concrete blocks. And so I was trying to run on the concrete blocks, but then also taking the tangents and then also weaving around people. And it had markers with every like 200 meters or 100 meters. So you could just see how far you were going. You're just like, oh gosh, this is tough mentally. And then there was a cantina where like a lot of the photographers and stuff were hanging out and having like boat drinks while you're running. And I was just like, guys, you're killing me. And they're like, oh, keep going. Good job. As their feet are up on the table. And of course, it's the sixth day also. So you've been doing this. So, you know, everyone's got, you know, issues with their feet and like chafing and, you know, most of the people have never run this far before, and myself included. And so then we finished in Dubai, and then so that was Asia. And then we flew from Dubai to Sydney via Indonesia because we had to get gas again. So we went to Indonesia and then down to Sydney. And then we ran in Manly Beach, which is a famous beach in Sydney. And we got in around, we were supposed to get in around, start the race around 10:30 at night, and actually didn't start until like 1 a.m.
Oh my
goodness. So we were supposed to have a big crowd of people there. And then by, you know, 1 a.m. on a school night, you know, not as many people were coming out, but, we did have like a kind of a big crowd, and I was able to win that race too. And then, since I'd never done that many miles, I stopped for about 5 minutes, and then I ran an extra 17 miles to get to 200 miles for the week.
Wow. Why not?
As if you hadn't done enough running already in the past 7 days. That's awesome.
Well, what was funny is then I had an interview with the Washington Post, my buddy Kellen, and I was like, my wife called me and she's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm running. She's like, oh, how far do you have to go? And I was like, oh, I'm going to try to do 17 more miles. And she's like, oh, you'll be done in like, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours. I was like, oh, no, I won't. I was going so slow.
I've got a drink in one hand and food in the
other. Yeah. I was like, it's going to take me almost 4 hours. Like, I am moving so slow. So it took a while, but I finished, and my sister-in-law was like, wow, you sounded kind of out of it in that interview. And I was like, I was pretty out of it. Yeah.
But I don't think anyone expected you to be with it. I mean, after that many miles, that little sleep, you know, you probably didn't know what was day or night anywhere because your internal clock was so off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's funny. And my buddy Roger from Hoka was there, and we did an interview before the race. And he's like, what time zone are you on? And I was like, we are not on a time zone. We're just like citizens of the world right now.
This is the crazy zone.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this conversation with Michael Wardian so far. We'd just like to take a quick minute and thank our episode sponsor, Sunbasket. Sunbasket makes it easy to cook delicious, seasonal, and nutritious meals in your own kitchen. You can get dinner on the table in 30 minutes. They use all organic, non-GMO ingredients from the best farms and fishermen and send it in a box that keeps the food cool straight to your door. I tell you, we've gotten a few of these boxes now, and this is no exaggeration. The best steak I've ever had.
Grass-fed beef. It was
so tender.
So flavorful, too. You can choose from paleo, gluten-free, vegetarian, breakfast, and family options for your sunbasket, and they're created by an award-winning chef and approved by nutritionists. Each sunbasket meal comes with pre-measured fresh ingredients and easy-to-follow directions. So go to sunbasket.com/marathon today and get your first three meals free. That's sunbasket.com/marathon to get three healthy, easy-to-prepare meals free. sunbasket.com/marathon.
We'd also like to thank Whoop for sponsoring this episode. We know that overtraining syndrome is a leading cause of injury and burnout for runners, and that's why it's important to monitor your recovery, and that's where Whoop comes in.
That's right. It was developed by Harvard scientists as the first wearable fitness device to automatically measure physiological markers to determine your personal readiness to take on strain for the next day. It's so comfortable that you can wear it continuously. It actually has a modular charger, so you can still wear it while it's charging.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally built around the principle of recovery and knowing, you know, when it's safe to go out there and push again and put more strain on your body.
Yeah, the cool thing is that the Whoop monitors each stage of your sleep and will give you a percentage readout of how well your body recovered after a night's rest. Whoop is worn by some of the best athletes in the world, including 20-plus Olympians, Major League Baseball, NHL, NBA, and NFL. And you can use it to prevent overtraining and reduce injury as a marathoner and long-distance runner.
So head over to Whoop.com and use the code MTA to save $50 off of your purchase. That's Whoop, Whoop.com, and be sure to use the code MTA. I'm sure you folks can remember that one. That's Whoop.com, and use the code MTA. You finished in Australia, it sounds like. Set the world record now for the fastest marathon on 7 continents. And what was your average time? I think you mentioned this in the beginning.
So the average time was 2 hours and 45 minutes. And my slowest time was in Antarctica, which seems to make, you know, sense. I actually set the Antarctic record for no one had ever run that fast before on the Antarctic continents for a marathon. So that was pretty cool too. So I ran 2 hours and 54 minutes there. And I think my fastest time was 2 hours and 36 minutes in Miami. And then, yeah, the rest of the times kind of fell in there.
So what I'm wondering is what's the secret sauce, Mike? I mean, you seem to be superhuman.
I don't know, man. I love it. I think that's a lot of it is, I really do love it.
Just passion, passion for what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that matters, man. I think like believing in what you're doing, and really being dedicated to it and committed and mm-hmm. and I was in love with it. Like each event, you know, had its own challenges for sure, and there were times that weren't fun. But in general, like who gets to do this stuff? Like nobody. I mean, like I was super. Yeah. Grateful and thankful, and I wanted to take advantage of the opportunity because you never know what's going to happen, and so I think that matters, and competition also. I mean, I think that like having the other athletes there, you know, because you could do it on your own, but I don't know if you could do it as well if you were just running against right. yourself.
Sure.
So like having that kind of camaraderie and kind of having this extended family and but also like having the aspect of competition, you know, drives you to be better. And
what about your training runs? Do you love to do that as well? Or is it kind of just a duty sometimes? Or what do you carry passion into that?
No, that's what's so great about it is I love all the aspects of it. I love the training. I like, you know, this is I've already done 3 workouts today and I'm going to run home tonight. So that's just what I love to do. And I mean, that being said, like, I love, you know, this part of it. I love, you know, connecting with people and, hopefully inspiring people. And I mean, I love the nitty gritty of like, you know, talking to the sponsors, like doing that kind of stuff too. I love the social media part. Like I'm really active on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And I love, you know, sharing what I'm doing and seeing what other people are doing and engaging in that way. And yeah, I don't think there's really anything. I guess the thing I don't like the most is the amount of laundry I create. I create a lot of laundry. which is kind of annoying for myself and my wife and everybody else.
Well, we sure appreciate you taking the time to come on the show with us today.
Yeah, yes, no problem.
Definitely. You're definitely an inspiration to us and to our audience. So keep up the good work.
Thanks. Yeah, and you guys can all follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And I've got a lot of cool stuff coming up. So, you know, the next big for sure thing is the Barclays Marathon. But I'm sure I've been looking at races to jump into. So I'm definitely going to jump into some marathons before that. And maybe an orienteering race to see how terrible I am, just what I need to improve on.
All right. Well, everybody, check out Mike Wardian online, and you can find links to all his social media over at our website. We'll have all that there. And Mike, thanks again for taking time to talk to us and inspiring all of us through your many adventures and running exploits. And one thing I don't know is, do you have a good nickname now? Is it Iron Mike or the Beast? I don't know. What do people call you?
Yeah, there's a couple of people. Yeah, definitely call me that. Or yeah, you know, Iron Mike has been one that's been around for a while. And you know, hopefully it doesn't jinx me, because as soon as you start calling yourself something like that, yeah, you know, you end up getting struck by lightning or something. So.
Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast and keep
all
up
right,
the work.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks for
Take
making
care.
The time.
Have a good afternoon.
All right, ciao.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Michael Wardian. We appreciate him being on the podcast again. And, of course, it was fun to bump into him in Berlin. He came to our meetup at the Berlin Marathon last year. That was cool. And I don't think we've seen the last of Michael Wardian.
I'm sure not.
Well, now it's time for this episode's quick tip. And we got a great question about compression gear. Actually, it was a question that was asked in our academy group, and we just thought it would be good to talk about compression gear and, you know, its effectiveness, because I don't think we've talked about it in a while. So Angie, take it away, because I know that you like to wear compression gear after a marathon. So
yeah, that's right. And maybe you don't feel like you're the type of person who recovers quite as quickly as Mike Wardian from endurance events. I certainly don't.
No, I bet he wears compression gear.
I bet he does too. And I personally think that it can be a big benefit to your training. Now, a lot of people ask, you know, is it effective during the run or just post-run? So basically, compression works by increasing the blood flow and helping to reduce lactic acid buildup through the lower legs. Obviously, if you're wearing calf sleeves or socks, if you wear the full compression pants, it helps include that blood flow further up as well.
Plus, you get a good workout trying to put the socks on.
Exactly. The evidence for benefits during running is somewhat anecdotal, but many athletes swear by the extra support and feel like their legs feel fresher during and after a run when they wear compression gear. And I really feel like it helps me. Just
I do too.
I don't know. You know, it could be in my head. It could be just, but I don't care if it is, because it feels better.
Even if it's in your head, it still helps you.
Yeah, exactly. Some people even report decreased incidence of Achilles tendonitis and shin splints if they wear compression gear regularly. And of course, beyond the possible physical benefits of wearing them while running, having the longer sleeves or socks can help shield your legs from dirt, pebbles, thorns, and other nuisances if you're doing a trail run or running through a grassy area. Plus, on those days when you can't decide between wearing shorts or pants due to the weather, you can maybe pair compression socks with shorts.
Yes.
And that's a good kind of middle-of-the-road solution as well. And now compression socks seem to come in every color and pattern and style, so it can also be a
fashion statement.
Yeah, a fashion statement. You know, you can kind of coordinate it to your outfit. And some are even reflective to have better visibility. So that's some of the benefits of wearing them while running. Now, you know, there's kind of a controversy. What's better, compression socks or compression sleeves? And it really comes down to personal preference. Since compression socks cover the entirety of your ankle and foot, they would obviously promote better circulation and decrease swelling through the ankle and foot area as well. However, you know, some people are very particular about the socks that they wear, and I'm kind of particular about what kind of running socks I have. So they maybe don't like the feel of compression socks. One good option would be to check into the sock brand that you like, and most of them have some type of compression sock that goes along with their brand. And if not, then, you know, the calf sleeves would be a good option as well. So you could pair them with your favorite type of socks.
Another question that comes up is, how long should one wear compression socks or just compression gear after a run?
Well, obviously, use post-run for recovery. Compression socks do help reduce swelling in your legs and help your muscles recover more quickly. A study published in the February 2015 issue of the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research found that wearing compression socks for 48 hours after running a marathon improved performance on a treadmill test 2 weeks later. Subjects wearing the compression socks in this randomized controlled double-blind test experienced 2.6% improvement on the test. And so the researchers concluded this indicated that members of the compression sock group had fully recovered from their marathons, while members of the control group had not. So 48 hours may seem like a long time.
I was thinking that.
I mean, you know, you're going to be squeezed to death for a while. Personally, after a long run or a marathon, I like to shower first, and then I wear my compression socks or pants for about the next 8 hours. I typically don't sleep in them, although I know some people who do, and that would be just fine. They can also be helpful to help promote better circulation if you have to sit for a long stretch of time, such as during a flight. So if you run your marathon and then you have to get in the car and drive for a long time or get on a flight, throw your compression gear on because that can really help. We actually had someone comment on our Facebook page named Dan. He recently wrote, I developed a DVT or deep vein thrombosis and PE, pulmonary embolism. And since then, I've been educating myself since there are a lot of risk factors for endurance athletes that I was not aware of, especially when flying. Up to 100,000 Americans die each year from blood clots. So, you know, it's not something that really a young, healthy person thinks about, especially an athlete, that they could develop a blood clot.
Wow.
But if you're doing a lot of exercise and then you pretty quickly sit for a long period of time, that just causes the blood to pool in your legs, that stasis there, and that can really increase your risk of blood clots. So definitely make sure you're wearing compression gear if you're sitting a lot after a race or a long run, and especially if you're flying.
So, Angie, do you have a particular brand that you like?
I do. I personally like CEP. I have several different brands that I've tried, and basically you know you have an effective pair of compression socks or pants if you break a sweat trying to get them on and off. And the CEP have the medical grade compression for maximum benefits, and you really have to wrestle those puppies on. I mean, you know, it's serious business. But other popular brands include CWX, the Swiftwick, 2XU, Zensa, Injinji even has a pair, and they all fit a little bit differently. You know, you might want to kind of look online to see a review of each of the socks. Sometimes they'll say that they fit different people in different ways and some of the benefits of them. But yeah, CEP is one of the ones that I really like. And my compression pants are CWX, actually. And they're good stuff.
Any other times that you wear them for any other reasons? Or just after long runs and races?
Yeah, I really haven't worn them other than that. I remember one marathon last year, the New Jersey Marathon.
Yeah.
And it was that miserably cold, windy race, and I was underdressed. So after the race, they had like these changing tents.
Mm-hmm.
But there was like puddles of water in the tent because water had run underneath the tent, and it was just cold and miserable. So I was trying to like wrestle out of my socks, my compression socks, and my shoes. And my fingers were so numb that I couldn't, like, work my laces. And then I had these pair of compression pants to put on after the race.
Mm.
And it was, like, almost impossible to get those things on because my legs were still wet. My fingers were cold. I mean, seriously, I was in there for, like, 20 minutes trying to get the stupid things on.
And at what point you're like, is this even worth it? Why did I come out here?
I know. I had a lot of second thoughts during that marathon. But once I had wrestled the compression pants on, I had warmed up significantly, and I think they helped keep me warmer. And then I had to get in the car and drive for like 6 hours after the race. So
yeah.
I thought that was very helpful for my recovery.
Yeah, if you haven't heard that episode from last year, it's worth a listen to because hearing about Angie's misery will help you put your own running in perspective.
And I think, you know, it underscores the point. If you run enough races or you do enough training, you're going to have those miserable long runs or marathons. And it's normal, you know.
It
is one of those things that we all deal with eventually. It's rarely fatal. And hopefully it helps build some mental fortitude.
Mental fortitude, that's what we're all about here on the MTA Podcast. Thanks so much for being a listener. We are going to let you go and want to remind you that you can get links to everything that was mentioned in the interview. If you head over to our website, check out the show notes. You can also find the points that Angie covered in her talk on compression gear and its benefits. And you can also find out how to join the Academy and go through our courses and program to train for your next big running goal. We'd love to have you join us. Thanks again to Sunbasket for sponsoring this episode. To get delicious organic meals shipped straight to your door, visit sunbasket.com/marathon. Until next time, remember, folks, you do have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way.